Good morning. I'm Maeve Conran. Thanks for tuning in to The Morning Magazine here at Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. Coming up on today's show, we'll hear about the rulemaking process that's currently underway at the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. This week, they're considering rules around the protection of wildlife when it comes to oil and gas extraction. Then, like many nonprofits, MESA, or Moving to End Sexual Assault, is grappling with reductions in funding. We'll hear about the important work they do and the challenges that they're facing right now. After that, we'll hear from you, the listener, that's on the comment line, before we go back to the BBC for headlines. Then it's time for science, and today on How on Earth, we'll hear about the new book, Clean, The New Science of Skin. The book's author, Dr. James Hamblin, provides insights not only about skin and how we take care of it, but also talks about human contact and spending more time outdoors. Good advice in these pandemic times. At 9 o'clock, we'll have a special Alan Watts for our full fund drive. It's a musical mashup where we bring you select Alan Watts talks paired with music. A special show for this special day. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock said on Monday that cases of the coronavirus are continuing to rise at a concerning rate in the city. At a press briefing yesterday, Hancock said Denver's 7-day average of daily case rates are as high now as they were at the height of the pandemic.
We've reached a fork in the road. As we've all seen over the last month, our case numbers are continuing to increase at a concerning rate, especially here in Denver.
Mayor Hancock said that a recent spike in cases was connected to returning college students, but he thanked local colleges for their swift handling of the situation. He warned that the city could reintroduce more restrictions if cases continue to rise, and that could result in reducing capacity in restaurants, stores and event spaces. Susanna Cordoba, who's the superintendent of the Denver Public School District, said at yesterday's briefing that DPS is now reconsidering opening middle and high schools for in-person learning in the light of the spike in cases of the coronavirus.
Health officials have shared with us that older students are at a much higher risk of COVID, and our partners at Denver Health are asking us to be more cautious at the secondary level.
Superintendent Cordoba said that families should know more details about any revisions for middle and high schoolers in the next day or two. Statewide, hospitalizations due to the coronavirus are also continuing to rise. The Denver Post reports that more Coloradans are in hospital for COVID-19 than at any point since late May. As of Monday, 288 people were hospitalized with confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Colorado. Boulder County is seeing a downward trend in coronavirus cases after a spike in September. 10 new cases were reported on Monday. A new report shows that between 2016 and 2019, the number of Colorado children without health insurance rose by 28%. Because the data was collected prior to the pandemic, children's advocates worry that rates will continue to climb. The Georgetown University Center for Children and Families report shows that in 2019, 73,000 children in Colorado were uninsured. Erin Miller with the Colorado Children's Campaign says between 2018 and 2019 alone, nearly 10,000 more Colorado kids lost coverage. That's the largest single year increase in more than a decade.
73,000 Colorado kids went into the pandemic lacking health insurance coverage, lacking access to healthcare services, lacking the financial security that health insurance provides.
The report also mentions the Trump administration's efforts to undermine the Affordable Care Act, including eliminating funding for outreach and navigators to help people enroll, along with additional red tape that makes it harder for families to access Medicaid or the CHIP, Children's Health Insurance Program. A high wind watch has been issued for the northern mountains and northern foothills for late tonight and Wednesday. Wind gusts up to 80 miles per hour will be possible. The wind and the high temperatures mean there's high fire danger, and in fact the entirety of unincorporated Boulder County is now under level 2 fire restrictions. Sheriff Joe Pelle amended the restrictions on Monday to include the eastern parts of the county because of the high fire danger that's caused by very low humidity levels and above normal daytime temperatures. There's no significant relief in the forecast. Highs today in the mid to upper 70s, and as I said, those windy conditions coming in later today. Similar temperatures and windy conditions in the forecast for Wednesday, but it looks like there may be a slight cool off coming on Thursday. Right now, the forecast highs are in the mid to upper 50s. It is 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is currently in the process of formulating new rules around oil and gas development in the wake of last year's landmark legislation, Senate Bill 181, that tasks the agency with prioritising health and safety when it gives out permits for drilling. Well, right now, the COGCC is considering rules that pertain to the state's wildlife and habitat. I spoke with Mike Chiropoulos, who is a member of the Wildlife and Biological Resources Commission.
So this is a coalition, and we're a stakeholder party that's participating in this COGCC, Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, mission change rulemaking. And we came together, I think it was the fall of 2019, and the idea was that the state legislature had passed the new law, 181, SB 19-181, and part of the law was ramped up protections for wildlife and biological resources. So that's what we named our group. And we're the biggest voice for biological resources and one of the leading voices for wildlife as well in the rulemaking.
Well, I think many of our listeners will be familiar with what's happened since Senate Bill 181, that right now the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission is in the process of changing rules now that they have a mission shift, which is instead of to foster development of oil and gas resources, it's actually to have health and safety of people and the environment at the core of all their decision making. So I think maybe what hasn't always been as prominent in discussions when it comes to the impact of oil and gas development is the impact on wildlife. We've often talked about the impact on the broader environment, certainly on air quality, the impact on public health. What has been the impact thus far, as you see it, on wildlife of oil and gas activity here in Colorado?
Yeah, wildlife is... We're losing habitat across the state. That's no secret. It's not just energy development. It's also population. It's new roads, subdivisions, water development to serve our increasing population. And but energy development with, I forget the number of wells in the state of Colorado. Do you know the figure, Maeve? It's on the order of about 50,000 wells, I believe. And the number, I think, is double what it was just about 10 years ago. So every new well location, every new well pad that's being drilled and developed in the state of Colorado is directly impacting the land where the well pad sits, and the new access road is fragmenting habitat. And the habitat fragmentation is important because one of the pieces of 181 that amended the past Colorado Oil and Gas Act and another law we worked to pass in 2007 is called the Colorado Habitat Stewardship Act. And that's the only law in the country, the last we checked, that directs state government to prevent and reduce habitat fragmentation. And that's a term that comes up under conservation biology, which is a scientific discipline, which is informing a lot of our efforts.
Well, the COGCC, as we said, is in the process of new rulemaking in the wake of Senate Bill 181. Take us through exactly what they're considering in terms of changes to current oil and gas regulation as it pertains to wildlife.
Yeah, and just big picture, the most important thing for the listeners to know and folks tracking this issue is that this new law, which was co-sponsored by some of our Boulder legislators, Mike Foote, Steve Fenberg, Casey Becker, and others, made this happen. So this change at the statewide level is coming out of Boulder County in a big way, but the bill was passed with strong majorities in both chambers and supported by the governor. But the key point I want to make is that this bill is a paradigm shift. It's not just incrementally changing the way of doing business. It looked at every aspect of the existing oil and gas law. It's a paradigm shift is how we're framing it. The legislators who sponsored it and drafted it are calling it a sea change. And Governor Polis is calling it a landmark oil and gas law. And five words or less, our first presentation to the commission was people and protections are paramount. So the legal mandates in the bill go to avoiding and minimizing adverse impacts to wildlife, the environment, including land, air, water, and biological resources. So that's what our group is talking about doing, and we've built alliances and collaborated with a wide range of environmental and citizens groups across the state, progressive local governments from Boulder County and Broomfield to La Plata and Telluride, San Miguel County on the West Slope. And we're working as hard as we can to make sure that the paper protections passed by the legislature into law mean something on the ground. And without strong regulations, so this rulemaking process, it's drafting the regulations that implement the broad language of the law.
Well, just as we finish up, I mean, as you said, Governor Polis has called Senate Bill 181 landmark oil and gas legislation. But what does the state need to do to implement this?
Yeah, it's really simple. Leave less marks on the land. And every new road, every new well location is a mark on the land. For people, we need to put these new marks on the land as far as possible from communities and residences where people live to protect our wildlife and biological resources. These marks on the land need not to happen at all in the ecosystems that haven't been touched yet. We're going to have a huge reclamation challenge on our hands as we transition. We make this just transition that the state has committed to a clean energy economy. So we've already got an enormous reclamation challenge to restore native vegetations and grasslands and pollinator habitat for the species and the habitats already impacted. What we're saying is these relatively untouched, healthy ecosystems, don't go there. Don't mark that land. Don't do it. And energy dominance, which is the current federal administration's policy, needs to give way to Colorado's just transition and a clean energy future.
That's Mike Shiropoulos, who serves on the Wildlife and Biological Resources Commission. Now, this week, starting today through Friday, the COGCC, Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, will be hearing hearing comments like this and discussing the new rules pertaining to oil and gas development as it is connected to wildlife. And the Wildlife and Biological Resources Commission, the coalition, is scheduled to present this coming Friday to the COGCC. It is 17 minutes past 8 o'clock, and a big thank you to everyone who has been calling in to KGNU in support of Democracy Now! And our local news. Thank you to James in Denver for making a donation today. He says he's a big fan of Democracy Now! Peggy in Boulder became a brand new member of KGNU. Welcome to the family, Peggy. It's good to have you on board. Thanks to Alexander from Denver for making a donation. Alexander appreciates Amy and Democracy Now!, also likes Duncan Campbell. And Janice in Denver, thank you for your contribution today. And Liza, who called in from Vermont to make a donation. She shares that KGNU brought Democracy Now! To us in the early days. And the KGNU broadcast of the show was her introduction to Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez and Nermin Sheikh and all the others at Democracy Now! Thank you, Liza. Great to hear from you all the way from Vermont and from the folks in Denver and Boulder and all around the Front Range. You too can call us and become a member of KGNU at 303-449-4885. And don't forget, we are still matching your contributions this morning thanks to this generous challenge put forward by David and Anne Rick. Your contribution doubled right now, 303-449-4885. Well, like many other nonprofits, Mesa in Boulder, which is moving to end sexual assault, are struggling with budget cuts. Everybody is dealing with this right now, but what's concerning is that this could result in a loss of programming. Now, Mesa is the only sexual violence resource centre that serves Boulder County. They're having a fundraiser this Thursday, and ahead of that, Janine Danibal, who is the director of Mesa, spoke with KGNU's Miriam Schiff about what the budget cuts can mean.
What is being cut is our prevention education programming in the schools and other community groups. And what happened with the state budget being in funding to a key program called the Tony Gramsci's Youth Services Program was cut, and therefore money to Mesa was not available. So we had to cut that program to about 75%. So we're limping by in being able to provide this crucial sexual violence prevention education now.
75% was cut. What was cut?
Yeah, so we had a full-time staff member, and so her hours were cut by 75%, so it means that she has about one day a week, a little bit more than that, to do all the sexual violence prevention in the county, which of course is not possible.
Where have you been presenting this program, and what does the program cover, as well as feedback that you've been getting from students and teachers?
So we've been doing the program in the schools, so middle and high schools throughout Boulder County, as well as different community groups. So for example, sports teams, faith-based communities, right? Education in the community. The feedback that we got, and most notably after we did presentation at Fairview High School, which I think you and I talked about after the very high profile case that hit there that came out last year, we had overwhelmingly positive feedback about that education program, that it was content that people maybe hadn't heard before or hadn't heard in that way. Teachers, staff found that very useful. And then the parents found it very useful and, of course, wanted more. Leaving me to say, at that time, we had one full-time person, when leaving me to say it's not possible to provide more of this. And it's certainly not possible now with somebody working one day a week.
Defunding this program seems to be pushing back the awareness of sexual assault education, rape culture, sexual violence. What do you see happening now that they're not getting the education that they were getting?
Miriam, what I see happening is, we'll really feel this effects in a year, two years down the road, when we start seeing the number of sexual assaults going up, 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 up. That's what we're going to see. So, and then of course, as we know, which will cost us more, both in human suffering and in actual financial costs in terms of missed work, physical health complaints, right, in the long run, than it would be to work on preventing just one sexual assault. We will do some, but like I said, it probably about at 25% capacity of what we've done in the past.
Is there anything that parents can do or schools can do themselves to continue the conversation about sexual assault prevention?
Well, they can talk about it. But here's what we're finding is that people don't know how to talk about it. They don't even have the right intellectual understanding or skill to be able to do it. So Miriam, I think would be even best is to help Mesa raise the funds and build back our capacity so that we can be that resource in the community. That's what I'm hoping happens.
There's a definite precarious nature in state funding, and I don't think we're seeing the beginning of it. We have not seen the end of it yet. My concern is that defunding the prevention education program can lead to future defunding of other programs within Mesa.
That it could lead to?
Yes.
It could, yes.
We're talking about a domino effect here?
Yes.
Social distancing is impacting many agencies. I'm hearing about fundraisers being done virtually, funders being very concerned about a scarcity and not funding, and that's not only the state, that's private sponsors and private funders as well. How are you working on getting fundraisers and
Yeah. So I'm same as you're hearing, right? The virtual fundraising is, it's all we have at our disposal to try to do, which we are going to try to do with our biggest fundraiser, coming up called Brave, Bold, and Beautiful. That's coming up October 15th. Here's the thing. People are on Zoom all day long. Right. And then here I come and say, oh, we have this great fundraiser. Join us on Zoom. And people are like, ugh. So we're just trying to take a little bit of a different angle with it. Like for this year, for example, we're having a comedian. And so just maybe in hope of having some lightness and some fun that can help us in this virtual world, because I think it's tough. Really tough to raise funds right now.
You said it was October the 15th. What time is it? How do people contact you about it and get tickets?
Yes. So October 15th, 6:30. The comedian, by the way, is a man named Sam Adams, who's very well known in kind of the front range comedy world. I've seen his trailer. He's hilarious. People can buy tickets at movingtoendsexualassault.org. And just really, like we've been talking about, this money goes to fund our prevention program. We have to try to make up that funds. Otherwise, we're stepping back, right? We're in a epidemic of sexual violence. Doesn't end just because we're in this pandemic. We have to keep trying to move it forward.
Besides buying tickets for the fundraiser, your organization, MESA, is doing so much to educate, so much to stop the flood of sexual assault, and also standing up and being an objective advocate for sexual assault that's happening, like in Fairview High School. What can our listeners do? You're so important. You're so important to the community and to our children. What can we do?
I think one thing that can be done is to continue to advocate to the school district about the importance of this education. Because here's the thing, Miriam. I think people would all agree it's important, but nobody has the expertise or skills to do this, you know, within the district and within most schools. So MESA is that expert, right? So if parents and community members go to the district and say, we have to make this happen, right? Some of our schools are not safe cultures. They are not safe. And look at it. If it wasn't safe in other ways from, you know, our buildings, our facilities, there'd be a lot of outrage about that. Well, some of our school cultures are not safe, and MESA can be that answer to help, you know, begin to educate, to turn things around. But the district has to feel that the community feels like this is important. So I'd say advocate to the district that this is important work.
That's Janine Danibal, who is the director of MESA, and their virtual event, Brave, Bold and Beautiful, a fundraiser, happens this Thursday. Find out more at movingtoendsexualassault.org. It's time now for the comment line.
Maeve, I bid you adieu. Thank you for real riveting coverage, for creating a more just, verdant world, as we once used to say. And although I was with you religiously every morning magazine before the pandemic culture at Denver Federal Center, since then, I am fortunately now tied to a headset for telework, so I don't participate now as I did then. But I do still wonder if my reality is so skewed on Denver's west side as compared to the rest of Colorado State. I mean, have our social apathy eclipsed our altruism? In my town, I am terrified to step out my home. Yes, friends acutely term my experience as white fragility, to which I sharply retort, isn't it fragile of me to pick up trash and litter and plastic pollution along the 6th in my neighborhood, an effort, I guess, to retrieve some lost privilege of which I'm accused based purely on my race and gender? I don't know. Maybe I can find it in some gutter trash before it washes down the culvert into the South Platte River. Or maybe it's on that poop-stained mask I just picked up next to a pile of human defecate in my local Denver park. But hey, first time for everything, right, Maeve? What happened to the 90s ethos that was so important to our advocacy? If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. I'm just scratching my head as a Generation X activist, wondering, have cell phones, computers, and the internet destroyed our communities? Or is it neoliberal plutocracy and the passage of Citizens United that leads the charge into our brave new world? It's sad, but I foretell and simultaneously experience the time when headlines like forced sterilization from the uterus collector are akin to the now commonplace plastic gloves and crap white paper masks littering our parks and streets, killing our wildlife and ocean species the globe over. I just continue to normalize. Like, welcome to America. It's the new China. Oh, well. Thank you, Maeve.
I enjoy listening to the How on Earth show, which is labeled a science show. But just because a topic is environmentally important doesn't make it science. For instance, today, October 6th program was on fracking and air monitoring. That's not really science. It does include use of scientific measuring and monitoring, but it's not science. So a small point, perhaps, but maybe you could label How on Earth a science and environmental issues show. That would be a little more honest.
Hello, this is Michael, a long-term listener member, and I wanted to congratulate the How on Earth team, Hillsong, and for the amazing original reporting done about the shale oil revolution and the farce that it actually represents, the financial trap. Wonderful work. Amazing with for a tiny little radio station to have such a power. Thank you.
Hi, Robert Hastings. I'm disappointed in KGNU's tagging of the Morning Magazine and of other newsy kind of programs, but mostly Morning Magazine. Morning Magazine has excellent content, and it's very interesting. And I go to search for Morning Magazines later on, and my gosh, there's nothing identifying the content for the day, most typically. So I'd like to admonish the KGNU news crew to please tag your content. Thanks. Bye.